Broadcasting live, it's time for Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome with Patty Azar, the value advocate for professional women.
Born to be wild.
Join Patty as she provides women with keys to success in business. Stop leaving money on the table and putting aside your joy and fulfillment, and walk through the door of prosperity. Now, here's your host, Patty Azar.
Hello, this is Patty Azar, and I am the host of Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome radio program, and I am the value advocate for professional women. Hello, Catherine. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and I am in love with this weather, as is my utility bill. It's for us to have rain and clouds in the month of June. This is fantastic.
It's a blessing. The Navajo always say, never curse the rain in the desert. And folks who don't live here, you probably don't understand why we're having a love affair right now with a cloudy day. It is a true blessing here. I am so glad that you're here today. We have a magnificent guest who's going to call in from Washington, D.C. She is Ann Harkins. She's the president and CEO of the National Crime Prevention Council. Most of y'all will probably know that the council is best known for McGruff the dog and Take a Bite Out of Crime campaign. She has a magnificent resume, and I cannot wait to talk to her about the topic of leading through conflict and crisis, because she's been here and been on the leadership front with our national leaders through some of the tough times in recent American history.
And from what I understand, she's still alive to talk about it. So I can only imagine the wisdom that she has, and even more so the organization that she leads. I love it shares a similar philosophy to us, which is really about empowerment. I mean, and she can talk more about this as well, but I love the fact that the organization was developed so that communities could take back control of the crime that was going on in their small world. So, you know, we're all about empowering women and men in leadership roles and really taking control of your own life. And the organization that she leads has a very similar historical philosophy.
So I'm so interested in, you know, how much we love smart women. We love accomplished women. And you can tell just from her resume where she's been, she's earned every role that she's ever had. And she's used them as stepping stones to where she is today. So it's just going to be terrific to be able to listen to Anne, for her to share with us about leadership, confidence, and then how to remain focused throughout true crisis. You know, this weekend I went and saw that movie Spy. I think you did too.
Oh, yes,
did you not?
We did. And you and I are the only ones that go see a movie for leisure on Saturday and then send one another pieces of communication about how we can integrate it into the messaging about leadership. But if you haven't seen it and you're a woman, you should go see it and then reflect on the poor messages that this woman had growing up.
Exactly. This really wasn't my favorite movie, but boy, there were some great messages at the beginning and then the empowerment at the end. But I love Melissa McCarthy. I love who she is. I love her, that she just throws it all to the wall and she has no fear and she doesn't care what anybody thinks about her or how she shows up or anything. But, you know, when she first started, she was a backup to a field agent. Of course, a beautiful guy. And of course, she was in love with him. And it was really interesting because as she sat and talked to one of her girlfriends, she said that women who behave make history. And I think I'm the only one that caught that. I caught that out loud and I said, I'm not so sure that was correct. And she also said every day in her lunchbox, her mother told her, don't go for your dreams. That was a note that she had. And it was so interesting to go through the litany of what we've always considered the good girl syndrome, the good girl messages, and how easily it is to pick those up from the models in your life, whether your mother, your grandmother, or your friends, or school, or religion, however it comes to you. And then as she was sitting in these meetings with the director, and it could not be more than three agents at a time, there were 8 to 10 chairs open at the table. She never sat at the table. She sat on the outside of the table by the wall.
In the corner, no less.
In the corner. And so it's like, wow. And so I know that that was written on purpose, and I know that she probably had a great time being able to act towards that. But it was so interesting because once they found out, when you get into the plot, she needs to go out in the field. She has never one time told anyone about what her value was.
She had never talked about her successes. She had never talked about her history. And, you know, it's easy for those of you that have seen it, or when you go see it, the ridiculousness of, you know, the messages she said she received as a child. And you're thinking, well, there's no way that that, you know, that's just slapstick comedy. But you and I know, because we've had conversations in the last 2 or 3 days with individuals that as children were told very specifically, we can't put you in a leadership role because you will lead people in the wrong direction. Translation, you will lead people to critically think for themselves and problem solve for themselves. We have heard from individuals in the last few days who, as a child, were told, in essence, be quiet, smile, be seen and not heard.
Color within the lines.
Right. Given those messages. So as ridiculous and crazy as this plot was, and you're laughing and thinking, well, this is slapstick humor. I wish it was slapstick humor, and I wish we had never seen that. But I thought it was ironic that then on Monday morning, you know, one of our first calls validated the very same messages that Melissa McCarthy had received and had knowingly adopted those principles.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because her director in the movie, unless she had video of her and her outstanding performance when she was training, not one time did she bring it up for herself. Not one time did she own her magnificence. Not only one time did she say, yes, I did that. In fact, when it was there, she still shunned it. And it was really interesting because we have had 2 magnificent meetings with women the last 2 days. One is the CEO of her own company, and another is a president of a company, not her company. And they both have stood up to say, you know what, I've had enough. I'm not playing the good girl anymore. These are the messages. And what I'm so proud of is the one who's the president actually exited, and this time it was on her terms, and it benefited her. And I got to say, yeehaw, because her doing that has lifted all of us up today.
You know, Patty, that's what we live for in our business day in and day out with our clients, are those breakthrough moments for leaders that say, they have that aha moment that can really push them to the next level. Interestingly enough, I was reading an article about an 18-year-old. Talk about wisdom beyond her years. She's a fashion designer, long story short. In an article, she says, I want to take this moment to say to you that you have to understand who you are, because if you leave that space open, if you leave your identity in the hands of society, they will define you.
Wow. So, I mean, she must be an old, old soul.
Old soul.
Because yesterday when we were talking to one of the female CEOs that we deal with another client, she had a devastating example of what happened to her when she was 17 years old. Because in her adult life, she has really shut down what she's considered curiosity, feeling as though she can ask the real in-depth questions because she's a why person. It's very, very important for her to uncover that. When she was 17, she was told explicitly that, no, you're not getting this role in the schools because you are a leader, but you're not the right type of leader. And so it's taken her into her 50s, and we told her yesterday, well, it's always been there. You shut it down and let us show you where it's been in your natural behavior, and now she's lining it with her thinking and her decision-making. All of us, there's so many of us out there, so it doesn't matter if you're in your 20s, 30s, 50s, or 60s, someplace, somehow, we've gotten messages to shut it down. That's why I'm so excited today to be talking to Ann, because Ann is in a meat grinder. She's in Washington, D.C., and she's been there for years and years. I'm so anxious to be able to find out what allowed her to message her confidence. How did she stay inside her authentic leadership? How has she been able to drive value for herself, for her community, for the United States of America, and for the folks who report up to her?
And do it in a bipartisan manner when your leaders are changing every other year. I mean, you constantly have an influx. So to have a leadership style that allows you to navigate those waters that change day in and day out, That's what I'm so excited to hear. You know, what are those tips stylistically that our listeners can embrace so that they too can move through conflict and chaos and change while still growing the success?
Well, I am Patty Azar, and I'm the host of Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome radio program. Be sure to come back with us, all you men and women out there that are listening to us, because we're going to tap into Ann Harkins, President and CEO of the National Crime Prevention Council. We're going to find out how she's been able to lead with grace.
Since 1990, Patty Azar, an organizational development expert, has been supporting, advising, and developing executives and functional leaders in the areas of strategy, leadership, and team development. She and her team approach their clients in a fun and engaging manner, utilizing the latest research positioned to drive real results to build company-wide alignment and high-performing teams. Patty and her team are able to meet your leadership and organizational needs through facilitation of leadership retreats, keynotes, public and private workshops, as well as licensing and train-the-trainer options for its products and services. For more information, go to bggsradio.com. Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome is the intellectual property and registered U.S. trademark of Vision Alignment, Inc.
Welcome back. I am Patty Azar, and I am the host of Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome radio program, and I am thrilled to welcome Ann Harkins, President and CEO of the National Crime Prevention Council. Good morning, Ann.
Hi, Patty. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
You know what, Ann? I had some emails come today from some males around the country. I don't even know who they are. And they're saying, wow, look at your radio guest and who you got aligned. And I said, yeah, wait till you hear who we have on today. Be sure you check in with us. So I'm just so grateful that you've taken time out from what you do, because you have a magnificent resume, because prior to your leadership role at NCPC, you were the executive director at CASA of the Eastern Panhandle and coordinated the West Virginia summits on homeland security in 2003 and 2006. Before that, and from 2001 to 2003, you served as the deputy sergeant of arms in the U.S. Senate. You were the chief operating officer of an 800-person administrative office and a senior Senate advisor after the 2001 terrorist and anthrax attacks. Now, let me ask you something. How do you still have any sense about you?
I've always maintained my sense of humor.
Oh, that is so good. So we're going to have a good time today on the radio then, because also you were on the cutting edge of intellectual property rights of the digital age, and then you also have your JD from Georgetown University Law Center and your MA in Latin American history and BA in history from the Catholic University of America. So anyone who's listening to us, as you know, we only have the best and the magnificent here, so we have another best and the magnificent. And you've had such an extraordinary career, and from what Catherine and I have done in the marketplace for all these years, it's one that really couldn't exist without confidence and your ability to communicate without emotion. Can you tell us where you found this confidence? Was it a little girl, or did you find it in school? Where did you find and gain your confidence, and what steps did you take to learn how to message in a non-emotional basis?
Well, I think I should start with the fact that I was blessed with parents who taught us, I have two brothers, the value of education and giving back. I've always had mentors who remained kind and supportive, even though they insisted on critical thinking and good writing. And I've had great coworkers and friends and a loving family. So I think all of those things support building confidence. It's hard to say how you go about it. I think going to law school helped tremendously, but without that background of parents who really said education is the most important thing and pushed it and you can do anything you want, having that where you start makes a huge difference. And then all of those stepping stones of I worked for several women, in fact, who were very good writers and insisted on careful grammatic making your case kind of writing even before I went to law school. And so all of that comes together, and good mentors. And of course, law school, and when I started out, I was in litigation. That training helps one, I think, both build confidence and learn how to make an argument in a non-emotional way, because that's the only way you're going to win.
Well, I just love that, because we're behavioral experts, and Catherine's over here going, yeehaw, because that's what we teach, and that's what we see about men and women out there, but how critical it is for you to understand the balance of the art and science of being able to communicate. How blessed you were, really, to have parents to understand that you can be a commander, you can live with grace, you can be gracious, and at the same time really develop those critical thinking skills to be able to win an argument. So within the same subject, you've held some very high profile jobs at many times that we've had some really critical times for our country. One in particular, you served as the Deputy Sergeant at Arms for Attorney General Janet Reno, and you had to respond to the anthrax scare, and you had many, many other issues out there that you had to testify before Congress. How did you prepare? And because I would think then at that time you're in that fishbowl, it didn't matter what party or whoever was up there as the head of those committees, I would think that that would be a frightening and intimidating unless you've been able to really, truly prepare. How did you prepare for that?
Well, let me first say I was Attorney General Reno's chief of staff
In
the Justice Department, and I became, these were two separate jobs, I became Deputy Sergeant at Arms in the Senate, and on my first day, the anthrax letters arrived. So
welcome to the new job.
Yeah, that was definitely baptism by fire. And I have testified before Congress, but I worked in the Senate. I worked on the Senate Judiciary Committee for Senator Leahy for many years. And so that is, again, when you talk about proving grounds and training grounds and how you learn confidence and the ability to think critically, the people on that committee, the senators and the staff, just great intellects and really hardworking, dedicated people. And one has to be able to respectfully work for a boss and kind of know the lines between it's the boss's decision and I am a staff person and here's my support role. And also when to sort of speak up for yourself and know how to make an argument. In fact, Senator Leahy told a story a couple of weeks ago about, I would say, oh, that's a very good argument, but perhaps you should consider this. And with Attorney General Reno, we were in the Justice Department, tough times, lots of heavy congressional oversight, but my role was more preparing her to testify and making sure we had sort of thought through what questions were likely to come, what were the correct answers. She always said, and I have to say this about my career, I was blessed with bosses who were in politics for the public service aspect of politics and serving their communities. And so good substance is good politics. Good substance, Attorney General Reno would say, follow the facts and the law. What do the facts and the law tell us? And that's how we get to the answer. And so working for people of integrity like that makes a job in Washington a joy.
Well, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. In fact, I was a citizen of Florida when she was appointed as Attorney General, and I watched her very carefully, just number one, being a female, number two, living in Florida, and then seeing all of the terrible things that she had to respond to. Waco, were you there during the Waco and all of that too?
I was still on the Hill during Waco.
Wow. So, you know, we have supported many chiefs of staffs in the four private area, not in even government, and that's one of the hardest roles that's there, because you have to be able to bridge sometimes without authority, working for your boss, and then the messaging to your constituents and to your members out there. Is that correct?
That's correct. When I was very young, in fact, I started in high school and worked summers during college in the passport office, and I was a an expediter, which meant one had to be able to grab, if there were 30 applications that needed special attention and needed to get out the door on a particular day, there might be 100,000 applications in the office, and you had to find the 30 and get them out. And in many ways, that marked my entire career. In the Justice Department, I would say half of my job was making sure the right people were in the loop and making sure that people who shouldn't be in the loop were gently eased out of it.
Oh, man, they need you to do that now in some other roles right now. But we're not going to get into politics, though. We're going to talk about the great public service aspect of politics today, not the other side of that coin. So being able to work and lead successfully through chaos and conflict, what I've heard so far is about who you've aligned yourself with, and that the people of integrity and the people who work for you are principled, and that aids you in being able to stay in such a public forum. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, absolutely.
So when you created the career that, you know, really prepared you to take the helm as CEO of NCPC, you talk a lot about you've had some great mentors. Did you have some formal sponsors that said, you know what, and you stick with me, I'm going to help push you through, I'm going to take you with me? Did you have anyone like that to say, I want to open the doors for you, let me help you advance, let me help you make more money, let me help you get to the position that's maybe your life desire?
It would be great if I could have somebody come in and say, I want to help you make more money. Not in the formal sense, never really a sponsor in that sense, but several people that I worked with on the Hill and in the executive branch supported my efforts, and in a very, very real sense, supported my efforts to become Deputy Sergeant at Arms in the Senate, which in turn I worked for Al Lenhart, who was the Sergeant at Arms, and it was he who brought me to NCPC. So in that sense, yes, but not quite as formal as you described it.
Well, you know, that's really great, though, because that's what we're really trying to get through to women, because that tells us that you earned the right to be there, and he saw your value, and it was safe to have you in his sphere because you had a very sacred relationship, I would think, so that if he confided in you, you held it with you and was able to support him too. That's what we're finding in these great mentor sponsor relationships.
Yes, and I would have to say in every job I've had, maintaining confidentiality was always an important piece of it, and I took it and take it very seriously. I think sometimes young people in particular who work for me think I'm a little bit of a nut, but if you really think about confidentiality, and I always ask people, remind people, how would you feel if whatever you just said was on the front page of the New York Times, or how would you feel if it was your confidential information that was exposed in some way? I would just say that maintaining confidentiality has also been an important part of my career.
Well, I tell you, I'm a real nut right with you, because I tell you, especially in this age, we were just talking earlier before the radio program how exposed everyone is, even if you choose not to be. And so it's so important for us to look at the other generations, especially the millennials that are out here taking over in the workforce just based on sheer numbers, and the understanding about how critical it is, and is there anything called confidence and sacredness anymore, and if so, how do we do it? You know, you have to stay with us because Ann Harkins is with us. She is the CEO of the National Crime Prevention Council, and she's going to come back, and she's been in the presence of so many great leaders. Stay tuned to find out which one had the greatest impact on her. Knowing her, she's got several. Hold on.
Think you might be playing the good girl and limiting your success, but not really sure what to do? Go to bggsradio.com for a complimentary copy of our Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome self-assessment. We will provide you with the simple steps to correct the issues impeding your success and fulfillment. It is our gift to you to say thank you for joining us on this journey. Again, that website is bggsradio.com.
Welcome back. I am Patty Yazar. I'm your host of Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome radio program, and I am the value advocate for professional women. I hope you stayed with us because this is Ann Harkins is with us, president and CEO of the National Crime Prevention Council. And if you think, and I kind of know what that is, think about McGruff the dog and taking that bite out of crime campaign. Okay, Ann, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Talk to us about at least one of your favorites or several favorites of great leaders you've been able to work with in your career and what made them great in your eyes.
Well, I'm going to pick Janet Reno because she was wonderful to work for. There are two qualities that she had that I truly admire. One was the ability to move from excruciating detail to high-level, big-picture issues. And
wow.
She did that masterfully when we were in the Attorney General's office. And the other that I think developed that to some extent, that ability to sort of know the big picture, know where I'm going, and at the same time be able to check the facts and have enough of a sense of the detail that that I'm confident in what I'm saying, but also if somebody probes, I have a good response. But one I have to aspire to is she also has the ability to. And I watched it in the Justice Department. She could go from a conversation where she was somewhat frustrated. You know, you had told me X, and now you're telling me Y, and I just want to be sure you're right. And that she really, she handled that well. And then she could take a deep breath and say, now tell me about this. And she had just gone from the frustrating issue to an issue that was easier or more favorable or just a less difficult conversation, and she could do it, she could make that switch in just a breath, and I really aspire to that capacity. And I also have to say she was a big promoter of crime prevention. I think the COPS program, many other programs that started during her tenure in the Justice Department, and the tenor of those programs, you can point directly to the Attorney General, and so I'm very proud of that, and it obviously affected my decision to do the work I'm doing today.
Well, I tell you, Ann, I'm so appreciative that you shared that, because you know, that's one thing that we have found out. We had a meeting with about 110 women 3 weeks ago. One of the issues was women being able to lose an argument, be able to rethink, regain, and then come back and gracefully continue to bridge and just continue to build evidence and make the point. That is a huge point for women out here, especially, and we're finding also folks who are in a minority inside of an organization, whether it be race, creed, color, or ethnicity, or even sexual orientation. And so that once you feel as though you may not be in control, you may feel as though people are letting you down, how in the world can you take information when people have let you down and say, you know what, how can we recover? We find out, especially when you're dealing with people in areas of influence, you have to give them an opportunity to recover, give them a sacred space so where we don't make people look bad, but at the same time, we can get back and get on course. I love also, Anne, that you talked to us about being able, because that tells me she was a high conformist and she really, really loved the law, because if you followed her, I mean the public followed her, you could tell that she had a great respect and for the law. And part of the issue is being able to take your natural behavior and then adapt your thinking to be able to adjust to both. And I love the fact that you were the opposite. So y'all must have been just a dynamite team. No wonder you love working with her, because she must have been so fair.
Yes. Yes. And completely straightforward. What you see is what you get. And That's another thing I aspire to.
Well, I can tell. I won't get off this radio program today thinking, wow, did she tell us the truth? I know you are a straight shooter, thank goodness. And that's what we are so grateful for, because we deal, our whole core value system in our organization, our principle is intellectual honesty. And if you can't have an intellectually honest conversation with somebody, you shouldn't even be in the conversation. So we hold that as our highest principle. So Ann, you're in Washington, D.C. Now, I know I hear we've got like 25,000 nonprofits in the state of Arizona, and then you're thinking, yeah, Patty, right, some of them may have $200 sitting in operational accounts. We've dealt with nonprofits, so we understand, oh, Lord, we've seen the best of the best, and like, really, really, seriously, this is a nonprofit? So you've got to tell us now, because we really are about value, women understanding their value. And then when you are leading a nonprofit and you're vying for the attention of donors and legislatures, talk to us about those political dynamics that change so much and how you're able to be successful, and so that folks understand your message, they understand you're principally aligned, and that you will execute and be a good steward of those donations.
Well, I think the work speaks for itself. If you look at the public education campaigns that the National Crime Prevention Council produces, they're high quality, whether it's intellectual property or preventing bullying and cyberbullying, or currently we have a campaign to encourage the safe storage of firearms. All of those ads are top quality, top notch, and completely nonpartisan. And so it is partly about the message, but it is very much about the quality of the work.
I love that, because, number one, I want to thank you for being nonpartisan. I'm beat up off of all this partisan stuff. I'm an American. You're an American. Everybody says, are you a feminist? No, I'm a capitalist. I'm an American woman, and I am fortunate to be here. So don't talk to me about politics. Let's talk about, like you're talking about, quality and then execution. So, and being able to do that and being able to bridge both, I would think then you kind of have a one-up on some of these other nonprofits, because you can go in and talk to someone who's a Democrat, a Republican, an independent, a socialist. Seriously, anyone that's there that could be in a position of influence, authority, and check writing.
Yes, and our mission is broad. I think in some respects, raising money is easier if you are single issue focused, but the National Crime Prevention Council never has been, and my approach to that has been to embrace the broad mission and be really careful about priorities.
So you leave about 3 to 5 priorities or 3 to 5 strategic objectives? Is that kind of how you lead?
Yes, although, you know, sometimes it's topical. So, for example, if we're to work on emerging crime trends, and there are 6 or 7 emerging crime trends that, in this case, the Justice Department, the grantor, has identified, you work with those, but you still have to set priorities because every one of them has multiple facets.
So what are you hoping for, like, in the next 12 to 24 months for your organization that they will be able to accomplish, and how could people help you out here that are citizens and or some influencers in states just like the Arizona?
Well, because we are a nonprofit, the biggest single help we could get is some private unrestricted money. So if anybody wants to write a check, we'll put it to good use. And I'm serious about that. I think in these times of all funding agencies, whether they're federal, state, or private, are really looking very carefully at their money. We've all suffered from the economic downturn of the last few years, and even though we're definitely coming out of it, I think people are still watching their philanthropy and being careful about how they donate funds. So the first order of business would be some private funding, but the we are working now on a number of high profile issues. We do training across the country in crime prevention through environmental design, how your built environment, whether it's a school or a large facility or even your home, how you arrange your lights, where the door is, all those things can affect your safety, and you can build in crime prevention. So we do a lot of training like that, the public education. And then, of course, we have programs from McGruff Club for little kids to Be Safe and Sound for school programs to programs to help people protect their financial assets. We've had a wonderful partnership with the FINRA Foundation to encourage people. And here's a good one for your radio show in particular. Who do you think are the people most likely to get scammed in the financial arena?
Women.
No, men, age 55 and older.
No, wait.
Who are well-educated, yes.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding.
Give us a little bit more info here. Like, I thought because so many women don't have the financial acumen, you got help our male listeners out here.
Well, take a look at our website, www.ncpc.org, and search FINRA, or go to saveandinvest.org, and you'll see the statistics. But, in fact, people who more senior citizens are somewhat more at risk, but the highest risk group is males ages 55 and older who are well-educated. And so we have a great product on the website called Protecting Our Assets, and it'll help you recognize the signs of fraud.
I tell you, I'm speechless, and all of us, there are three females sitting around this table right now, we're all saying, what? We know she's telling us the truth. That is amazing to me because we've had so many folks on, and women in particular, that talk about women and their lack of financial acumen. So maybe sometimes having the lack of acumen means you're not going to be as you won't be taking as much risk, because that sounds like to me people get caught up in taking big risks for big gains.
That's exactly right. And one of the things you have to watch out for is in this economy, if people are telling you that you are going to double your investment, you automatically need to be skeptical about that. If people are telling you you're going to make 10% on an investment, you ought to be looking at it very carefully. And so these materials on our website help you sort of sort through all of that.
Oh, my gosh. You just must be in love with what you do and have some real fulfillment and joy knowing that, you know, what you've done in your lifetime actually means something. I mean, what you do actually will have a good positive ripple in 100 years to come.
Well, I don't know about 100, but that's why I do it.
That's magnificent. Okay, my dear, we cannot let you go. Here you are in the middle of Washington. We have two female presidential candidates. Without getting into politics, is Washington ready for one Democrat and one Republican female candidate?
Well, I think that, I mean, yes, Washington's ready. But I guess I would say you probably wouldn't be asking that question if there weren't still something of a glass ceiling or sort of gender-based issues that we as a society need to dispense with. So I'll be happy when that question is no longer relevant, whether it's about race or gender or anything else, where we can just all be Americans and go for the gold. But I also think it's wonderful that there are women in the House and the Senate and candidates in both parties who have a realistic shot at the White House. That's we've come a long way since I started my career.
Well, I have to
those women are being trailblazers, and they're teaching women how to do it, and that really matters as well. And I think I was blessed with serious and wonderful and demanding male mentors. I believe now we have women who are playing that role for both men and women, and all of that is to the good.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, Anne, because that's part of what we're hoping. We're hoping by the time that maybe I actually leave this earth or sell this company or whatever my exit plan is going to be, we're hoping that gender will fall out of the minority categories, and at least so that we can say, you know what, it's the mind, it's the integrity, it's the principle, it's the execution, it's that critical thinking But I have to tell you, I feel so blessed as a female, as an American female, to have the honor to have you on the show, because talk about blessed. You are a blessing. And I just cannot tell you how awesome it is to be out here working and helping not-for-profits and for-profits, that someone of your caliber is in their position to be as a public servant and being in what you call that aspect and not being political. And it's just been a wonder and a blessing to have you. And I just cannot thank you so much for calling in to talk to us.
Thank you, Patty. And Catherine, it's my pleasure.
Well, listen, thank you so much. And listen, our listeners, male and female, you cannot leave us, because we're going to come back and we're going to do a recap in our wisdom segment of just the fabulousness of Ann Harkins, the president and CEO of the National Crime Prevention Council. You have to come back. We're going to wrap it up.
Join Patty as the value advocate for professional women. Want to know more about Patty and her team's service offerings? Simply go to bggsradio.com. You can also reach us by email at patty@bggsradio.com or by simply calling us at 480-778-1818.
Hey, this is Patty Azar, and this is segment 4, Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome radio program. And Catherine, I am amazed, thrilled. I've got chills up and down my body to be able to be in, to be connected with someone of the caliber of Ann Harkins. And I love a CEO of a nonprofit that says, yes, I need private, unrestricted dollars. How awesome is that? Now, talk about understanding your value as a female.
Talk about understanding the strategy of the organization and being so bold. I absolutely love that. You know, my husband has worked with Ann Harkins in his past careers, and one of the things that resonated throughout her interview, and I know from his dealings with Ann and her organization, is this issue of integrity. And it's such an important issue that I think for many years here in America, I don't know that we fully lost it, but I think, you know, the grass grew up a little tall and we couldn't find it when we needed to. And I mean, that's sort of, you hear that woven throughout her career, that importance that of integrity and doing the right thing. And I'll tell you, and I have many instances where she stood in the face of opposition and negativity because it was the right thing to do, and she didn't make a change. She wasn't concerned. She didn't back down. She stood there with command and presence, and that's so not the norm.
Well, I tell you, I was so impressed when she started talking about Janet Reno and the relationship that she had, and that Janet Reno really loved evidence, data, details, and how she was able to understand that and then work it backwards to translate it to the big picture. And then for Ann, she had her sweet spot is the big picture, and to be able to come down and say, you know what, what's the impact here? What does that mean? What is it going to mean to the outcome and to the execution? That is such a critical lesson for men and women to learn. And especially when you're in a position, and you're chief of staff. I saw a TV show on one of the former chiefs of staff for Richard Nixon. That's the hardest job ever, because you have to bridge your boss, and you have to tell folks for your boss that, no, that's not what they're going to do, and you have to maintain those relationships. That must be just a meat grinder to be in. But she must have done it with such grace. I bet she made people so mad because they couldn't get mad at her.
Well, there's a great line in one of my very favorite movies, The American President, where the chief of staff said, if it wasn't for me, you would be the best history professor at the University of Wisconsin. and I love that she served in the chief of staff role, which was the supportive role. Much of what she did was behind the scenes and the preparation. But yet she understood her leadership. She understood her value.
Yes.
She understood how she could drive the greatest ROI for the individuals that she served. and she stepped into that leadership capacity fully. And I love that she didn't want to be the attorney general. She didn't need to be the one that was testifying always before Congress, but she could use her leadership skills to support the ones that were above her.
She's what we call the true chief of staff, because she was the strategist behind and making sure that what we call the performance loop was closed like that. And wouldn't it be cool to talk to Janet Reno and to get Janet Reno's take on Ann? Because it would have to be, I would think, a love fest. And I mean that in the most respectful way, because everything that Ann did for Janet Reno really helped her. Because I remember Janet Reno and thinking, wow, the issues that she dealt with. And then can you imagine walking in and saying, hi, here's your anthrax letter.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I was thinking that as Ann was talking about the leaders and the wisdom that she learned from them, all of the counsel that every single one of our listeners has given us has been not gender specific.
Right.
And that's what I love about all of our guests, is that the same pieces of advice that she would give to women are the exact same pieces that she would give to men. And one of the issues that she talked about in terms of Janet Reno and what she loved about her was that ability to move from the operational and the tactical, in the weeds, in the detail, to moving to the strategic level. And we do know that for so many, I mean, it is actually men and women, there's that sort of middle ground where, you know, the sticky floor, it has lots of different terms that are associated with it, but it's how difficult it is to be able to make that transition, to go from a conversation where you have to have all of the details, you have to have all of that knowledge, and then to turn around and be able to message only the strategic impact to a different audience.
And, you know, another thing, too, that I think is so critical for everyone, especially for our women, especially for anyone who's sitting in an organization that's as a minority, is to understand that when people let you down, that to be able to regroup your thinking, understand what happened behind that, move past it, and still execute towards the objectives, towards the initiatives, and what's going to be important, so that's how you really maintain the professionalism. That's how you keep your high potentials, your high performers out there. And, you know, when I talked to her, I couldn't even, you know, I knew we were talking to a female, but in my mind, it's like, man, I'm just talking to a great leader out here. I didn't care if she's male, female. I could have cared if her name was Ann or Andrew.
Absolutely. And you hit on this, Patty, and this is something that we talk about with our clients that we work with, is that importance of trust. And let's be honest, we're all going to screw up.
Yes.
We're all going to break trust at some point. And I think where business fails, and it doesn't just fail on the people side of the business, because anytime you have broken trust, the outcome is going to be isolation. You're going to start working in silos. Communication is going to go down. Innovation is going to go down. Fear is going to go up. So what you said is so correct. When you get into a situation where trust has been broken with a colleague, you have two options. You can either get mad about it, talk to everybody that can't fix the problem, or you can go to the person privately whose trust was an issue and discuss what happened, what went wrong, and how to move forward. I will say that 70% of the time, it was not purposeful. It was not with any malintent. It was simply a misunderstanding, miscommunication, or someone thought they were doing the right thing, but it ended up going off in a different direction.
Employees do what they think they're supposed to do. They make assumptions unless you tell them. But, you know, we're big believers that when you work with senior executives and you work with folks that have this type of responsibility, and, I mean, you're in the public domain like that, and every news organization wants to rip your head off, you have to allow people the opportunity, the space. We call it let people go off and marinate in it, let people think about it, and then to come back. Because, I mean, we've seen so often, and when we were talking about the females in Washington, is Washington ready for a female president? And, you know, it's really about the issues of bias. And the way that Janet Reno, helped, from what she tells us, how she showed up and, you know, and was day in, day out. And what a perfect mentor, because the best mentors you have are the ones that don't tell you anything. They do it all by example, because your actions scream. People forget what you say, but they watch your actions day in and day out.
And I think that obviously that's something that she learned early on in her career, because clearly that integrity issue is first and foremost for her. One other issue that I thought was interesting that we haven't really spent a lot of time on is the importance of communication. And we do talk a lot about verbal communication, but I thought it was very interesting that she talked about that early writing and how to make a solid business argument. And, man, that is an issue where so many of us, so many people in business really struggle, is that ability to effectively communicate your business argument in a non-emotional way. And clearly what she was saying, the translation was, it starts with being able to write a good, legible argument. If you can write it, then you can message it.
Well, I love the fact that she went back to her roots and talked about being kind, supportive, with the ability to critically think. So that comes back always to us about the confidence to be able to message so you can drive your intended results, so that your audience is glad to be in your sphere of influence. And so that it tells me, too, where her natural leadership style is. She's extremely collaborative. She wants teams. She values teams. She values what the end product is going to be. And she has built such confidence. And not just in terms of competence, in terms of, you know, hard skill, but she's built competence in terms of leading, messaging, how to put the right people in the right role. And then also, I love the fact that she knows clearly what her vision is. And she knows that she's taken on a broad spectrum mission, which, you know, you don't hear that very often anymore. And if people have a broad spectrum mission, they don't even know they do. She knows it, and she can come back and clearly articulate that. It just must be magnificent to be in her shoes. I know she works very, very hard. She's very diligent. I just can't believe that we were fortunate enough to get her to take 20 minutes of her life to spend with us today. And because her message was to everyone out there, critically think, understand who you are authentically, align yourself with the right people, and continue to grow.
Well, and she spoke about something that historically was really a nonprofit issue, scope creep.
Yes.
And but interestingly enough, we have seen that enter into the for-profit sector, into the private sector, where it's a good idea, you think it's going to draw in revenue, and so you dive in. And what you don't realize is that by diving in and allocating the resources in area A, you are neglecting areas B and C. And so even with a broad spectrum, a broad vision, you still have to go back in and isolate and narrowly focus where it is that you're going to put your all of your attention and all of your revenue, because if you don't, then you're going to have 10 low-quality programs. If you do, you're going to have 3 or 4 high-quality, very successful programs that you're launching into the community.
Well, she said everything they did is of high quality because, you know, I had to keep reminding myself if I talked to her, she's truly a businesswoman who is leading a not-for-profit where the IRS says, I've got to look at you differently. She has the business practices and thinking of no matter, it could be Coca-Cola, it could be PepsiCo, it could be Facebook, but she just happens to be a not-for-profit. And what I really appreciated there also is that how she spoke about that. I kept thinking, yes, 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 this is a council, this is a not-for-profit, where she has to go out and find donors and stewards and people who, you know, fall in love with what they're doing out there. So it's so interesting. I mean, she was a relief to me today, and she was like just a bright, shining star out here for every person who's leading an organization, working in an organization, or aspiring to do so.
Well, and I'll tell you one last parting piece of wisdom. If you're a leader, you better hire smart. She gave an example of that. You need to make sure that the people that you're going into battle with have your back, that they are going to give you all of the data that you need. They're going to give you the correct data that you need so that everyone can be successful. So if you're hiring and you're only hiring based upon a resume, you will find yourself injured in the middle of the battle.
Or destroyed.
Right.
And that was the great thing about her, because she made no bones about that. A-plus people, she didn't say it this way, but
right.
A-plus people put A++. We have to leave. I can't believe we have to leave already. I am Patty Azar, and I am the CEO and founder of Vision Alignment. Check us out at vision-alignment.com. And I am the host of the radio program, Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome. Come back with us next week. Wait till you see who our next guest is. Check us out. Thank you so much for all your listening. Come back.
Thank you for joining Patty and Breaking the Good Girl Syndrome. Please join Patty every week for her insightful views and great guests. Make the best of you.